suddenly wedged itself into the corner, so far refusing to explode. It has crashed through all five floors of the Hôpital de Cherbourg above him. There is blood and flesh on its metal skin. It is already a killer. "A little more light over here, if you please," he whispers, as if too loud a voice might cause the thing to shift and tumble. The corporal, crouching nearby, obliges, redirecting his flashlight beam. "What's she look like, Captain?" "A 4,000-pounder, SC-2000. Half the weight is the Amatol warhead. Ammonium nitrate, everyday fertilizer."
"I know all that, sir, but what I'm wondering is if she's okay to try to move, or we gonna have to blow her up right here?"
"No offense, Corporal, just thinking out loud." The bomb suddenly drops a terrifying 6 inches, splintering more timbers, sending up additional dust. Its pug nose is now inches from the stone floor. Both men instinctively scramble backward, crawling crab-like over piles of rubble, far enough away so it won't crush them, along with the roaches and rats, likewise scurrying about. But they are all still 1,000 feet short of where they need to be to avoid being blown asunder if the bomb suddenly decides to do what it was created to do.
"Guess that's your answer."
The captain coughs as he dusts himself off and stiffly gets back to his feet. He checks himself for scrapes, nail holes, and other contusions.
"We render her safe right damn here and right damn now. And by the way..."
"Yes, sir?"
"Let's hope she doesn't start ticking. That'd give us probably 14 seconds to pray for forgiveness for our many sins."
The captain glares hard at the bomb, as if daring it to go ahead and do something so crass.
"I remember that much from training," the corporal offers, his voice dry and tight. "You know, sir, there is one thing I never learned at APG," the corporal says with a sideways smile.
"What's that?"
"That ass-kicking staring technique you're so famous for."
"Once we get through this job, I'll happily give you a lesson in advanced command procedure," the captain responds with a mock smirk. He gingerly runs a calloused finger along the rough outer casing of the bomb, thinking how innocent it looks. Like the propane gas tank hooked up to Mom's kitchen stove back home. It was a local scandal when she got that thing. Using propane in a coal mining town was a sacrilege. "You remember the most important thing they taught us there, don't you?"
"I remember plenty, but what do you got in mind, sir?"
"Luck is a bomb disposal man's only true friend." The captain bends at the waist, overcome by another coughing fit from the billowing soot he has inhaled. It takes him a bit to catch his breath. He spits and stands upright.
"Hand me my tool bag and then go up top and tell somebody in charge to hurry up and move as many more patients as they can."
"Yes, sir."
"And if you don't hear some kind of god-awful explosion in the meantime, come on back and help me pull the guts out of this son of a bitch before it shifts again and mashes us to death."
By the time the officer finishes his sentence, the corporal is gone, wriggling through the wreckage of the 200-year-old building toward a convenient hole blasted through the rock wall at the far side of the cellar. The captain is suddenly overcome not so much by the difficulty of breathing, but by a powerful sense of déjà vu. Not unlike a coal mine explosion back home, collapsed timbers, scattered fallen rocks, the air thick and choking from pulverized concrete, now reduced to powder, working with a frenzy because people's lives are in jeopardy. He shakes his head to clear his thoughts. 100-plus patients, nurses, and doctors up there, many of them wounded American soldiers cut down during and just after D-Day, depend on his ability to render this steel monster harmless. He knows precisely how to do it if the massive device does not rise up and strike first. He selects a screwdriver from his bag, gives its well-worn handle a quick, sincere kiss, turns, cuddles up next to the bomb, and gets to work. Chapter 1.